Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
And Benroy Turner.
Hi.
And we thought we would do, because we started doing the best games of the year, we started doing the worst games of the year over on the main channel, and I thought, you know, there's a whole other different load of 2019 things that we haven't done yet. So to do something positive, I thought we'd do the biggest surprises of 2019. It can be a specific game mechanic, and it could be any number of reasons why a certain game sticks out. But I'm going to open this up with Apex Legends, because we have three each, I should say. Yes. I'm going to open this up with Apex Legends, because I thought I was done with Battle Royale. As you shake your face,
I just genuinely forgot that this was this year.
It is weird, isn't it?
That is crazy.
It did sort of come and go.
It was 2 weeks for me, and then I just deleted it.
Right. Okay. So I liked it a lot more than 2 weeks. I think I did anyway. My point is, I was surprised by it because I thought I was done with Battle Royale stuff, especially after PUBG, Fortnite, fine, you know, whatever. And then as soon as you sort of apply like an actual combat model or something, I know you'll disagree because you love PUBG. But as soon as you like apply like something on the level of what Respawn do with essentially just Titanfall 2 mechanics in a Battle Royale setting.
Yeah.
I loved that, and I thought, I was like, oh man, I can actually really get into this. And I played it like, you know, pretty solidly. I'd still occasionally dip back into it. I'm yet to delete it from my XMB. So yeah, I think it's a good little injection of what you can do with the genre.
It's not that I don't like it or think it's a bad game. I think for me, Battle Royale is basically you find your one and then you stick with it.
Yeah.
Like we've just finished PUBG the season 3, where like all the, what's it called, battle pass and everything like that. And I'm just into, I like popping back in there, going through Erengel and all that. But for me, Battle Royale, because it's such a time sink, I think you need to have your one.
Yeah, maybe. Have you found it?
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm the same as you. I was trying to get Benroy to play it at launch. I remember coming in and being like, Benroy, this is the one. And you already have the one in PUBG. But I was just thinking,
He might as well be married at this point.
He might as well be.
Trying to offer him up different.
This was the Battle Royale game that sort of got me back into Battle Royale. Because I want to love that genre. I remember when PUBG first came out and I couldn't play it because I don't have a PC that can run Gone Home, never mind a game like that that has 100 players in. And I remember just waiting for the one to come by that actually gripped me. I tried all of them. I tried Fortnite. I tried PUBG when it came to consoles. And then Apex Legends came around. And it was the one I was least convinced by because obviously, you know, it's EA, came out of nowhere. It looks like a cash grab. I wanted Titanfall 3, very Overwatchy. But it absolutely just sort of nailed that squad-based gameplay that I was looking for. I liked the idea of the ping system. I remember thinking that was so revolutionary at the time. I came in and I was talking to you guys. I was like, no, the ping system is the future.
Yeah, it actually does give you like more mechanics, like, you know, in the moment than you would have in most of the other online stuff. Obviously, Fortnite stole it immediately.
Like, literally the week after or something.
So we've patched it in. I mean, I guess it's not that hard for them to put stuff in, but it does make you rethink like how to, I don't know, work with a different team without having to actually talk to people. So I do like that.
I think what Benroy said is quite cognizant there, though, because when it comes to Battle Royale...
But cognizant at 3 p.m.
Sorry, it's...
good Lord.
I'm just hoping something sticks and saying lots of words. I think what Benroy said there was really salient. I'm going to go with that
Oh,
one.
God!
Because when it comes to Battle Royale games, I love jumping into them. And with Apex Legends, I was there for the first month. But then if I don't play it for a little while, I feel like I kind of, you know, fall off it, and then people surpass me in skill, and then it becomes not fun.
I know exactly what you mean. I think there's something about the genre that just you have to keep like digging deep within yourself to keep going, because it is such a hard reset every single time.
I appreciate the different takes and all that, but, but literally this, like for PS4, we just got the ability to shoot gas cans and now they explode. Game has changed.
It's like when Zelda got a jump button. It was like everyone else was like, really?
Just everyone's gone crazy.
Josh, your first game, was The Sinking City.
Yes, now
what's the big deal? real.
I must preface this by saying I have not finished The Sinking Sea. Okay. It is currently in progress. And yeah, I was kind of... I didn't even know this game existed, to be honest, until Jules and Ash went off to see it, and then Ash reviewed it. And then it instantly got my receptors tingling, because it is a horror detective game that is based on Lovecraft stories, and that is sort of my stuff. Can't say what
you
I
could wear
want
a squid on your head, right?
You can wear a squid on your head, Ben Roy, because that's what Lovecraft
is. How
is
it super serious and a detective thing, but also there's a squid on your head?
Well, that's the beauty of Lovecraft, because it's so abstract, and human minds aren't supposed to be able to comprehend it, and there's giant squids that are gods, and yet it's really scary and really sort of like serious. It's weird that the way they play with it, because it does tackle sort of difficult themes at the heart of it. Like when you first boot it up, it has a sort of, not a warning, but a message at the beginning saying that we're going to tackle some, you know, quite complex social themes, or at least we're going to brush up against them, because Lovecraft's writing is, you go back to it now and it's very, very, very problematic, and it's not, sort of, it doesn't translate easily to modern adaptations. And I like that they have tackled that kind of head on. I'm not far enough into it to see how that develops, or even if it's a big part of the story or focus, but the weird twist of horror and detective work, because it's made by the same people who made the Sherlock Holmes games, it kind of works.
At least in your case, it does actually just
it's
work.
It's very, very flawed.
Did it have Return of the Obra Dinn last year?
I didn't.
Oh, Josh!
It's a PC thing. Again, I can't play Gone Home, okay?
If I can get it to work on my Mac, to be fair, they should put it on everything. Yeah, they should put it on everything. That game is made to look like an old school Apple II style thing.
Yes.
It would run on like a Nokia 3310. But you should absolutely dig out Obra Dinn somehow. I don't know
Bloody Benji keeps telling me to play it as well. He loves it. I really want to play it. I'm looking forward to it.
It's good.
Give me a computer to play it, I will play it.
It plays on my MacBook Pro.
What was this comparison you were going with? Why did we bring
I just feel like there's sort of the detective vibe. Like, I feel like, I don't know, all I've seen is a few like bits on YouTube and that sort of thing, and like the look of it. But I was wondering if it just like, the whole thing of like, is the detective genre sort of like coming back up in different ways? Because is there any combat in this? Because there isn't any combat in Obra Dinn.
There is combat in this. It's very floaty. I'm assuming
a Bioshock vibe, but I could be wrong.
Similarly. It's very much inspired by a lot of different games, and I think to jive with it, you've got to also jive with its problems, because it's very janky. It sort of wears its kind of potentially limited budget on its sleeve, but it is ambitious in spite of its flaws, and I think that's what sort of defines, you know, a surprise game or some. It's like an underdog, and I want it to succeed.
I like, even just through subject matter, it seems like it's got enough of an identity, which is like, that's kind of what you need at this stage. Like, there's so much identical stuff that it's good that it can stand out just from that. Ben Roy, your first game was A Plague Tale.
Yes, something that I've been literally gushing over all year trying to play, but kind of like, I don't know why the £40 price point just didn't want me to get in there. I underestimated how big this game was going to be. It's like literally a full length. I think I spent 12 hours playing this thing.
Like one sitting.
I had my birthday off, so I sat there for 8 hours playing this game and just going through it. And I think that's why I fell in love with it so much, because if you play just the first part, it's going to feel really sort of slow. And like, this tutorial goes on forever. Are we back in 2003? But just something different about the setting, and like during the Black Death and the Plague and all that sort of thing, where I've just never played anything in that sort of time period.
Yeah.
I know like Assassin's Creed likes to jump around different time periods and everything, but I'm not really an Assassin's Creed player.
Made me think of Dishonored with like the rat swarms and stuff, but the rat tech or whatever you want to call
and
it.
It's something about these rats that just instill fear. It's different to just being chased by a dude or something. It's like this swarm of, I think it's the kind of why like this scimitar, like zombies, like just it's this pile of enemies out there. But the difference between these rats is it's always like a light puzzle to get through each sort of level. And every time you go through more and more, they try and mix it up as much. Like you get sort of, you have this sort of sling that you can like, first of all, just throw rocks at guys' heads and knock them out.
Oh, Ben Roy, no, we're not back to throwing rocks around to get around stealth.
No, this one, they hit them in the head, mate. That's the difference.
It's not to like, you can throw a jar, but you only can hold like one jar. But it's more like, at first of all, you start off by dinging something and then they go there. And then you get the ability like acid, things.
So acid rocks,
acid
mate.
Rocks.
Like you construct this sort of like pouch and you throw it. So it melts the helmet. So they take their helmet off. So then you can knock them in the head. And things like that.
I think it's worth highlighting as well, just the general, I forget the name of the studio, which I did have the top of my tip of my tongue before, but they've done a lot of contract work, and then they finally had enough money to sort of go in their own direction.
And it's just set in France, it's all weird, and it's something about that. I've not played anything like this in a while, like the style of it and just the setting. And I even enjoyed the re-intuitive boss fight of just like knocking the guy's armor off one by one. I thought that was like a nice different challenge.
It's neat. That sort of stuff, it reminds me a little bit of A Way Out, where it's like a little game that could kind of thing. Yeah. You have little, it has enough aspiration to carry it. And I think, yeah, like I said, with the story, it's got like a, almost like a, well, it does have like a supernatural bend to it, which I wasn't expecting. I thought it was going to be more like Kingdom Come and just be like an old school, because it is set in like, I don't know, revolutionary, whatever era, France or something.
Yeah, it does escort really well.
Yeah, and it's like, I guess, like you said at the beginning, you have like box puzzles and hiding in tall grass and whatever, things that sort of jar with me, but it definitely does open up. And the story's great.
I've never looked at death as I, like, in the certain ways of the disc game. When you go through a battlefield that sort of ended, you remember like episodes of Game of Thrones where you had piles of dead bodies everywhere. Yeah. There's this point where you go through a battlefield and far as you can see, obviously you can't go there, but there are just dead bodies everywhere and rats all swarming them, so sometimes you're climbing over them, sometimes you're lighting a torch. It's
very atmospheric.
Very atmospheric, very striking. And I don't think there's going to be anything like that for a while.
I love that. There's a lot of these mid-tier games. And I don't mean that as a sort of derogatory thing. I just mean they're not quite, you know, indie as you expect, but they're not sort of... They're like indie games with AAA aspirations.
I think Hellblade set it in motion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hellblade, you've got The Sinking City, you've got A Plague Tale, you had Vampire last year. I think all of these games have really interesting settings that, even though I don't really... the quality may vary, I'm always interested in just jumping into these worlds. I think the worlds themselves are enough to sort of sell those experiences.
Totally. I mean, the variation that you get, like, it reminds me of like when you grew up playing games, and variation, mechanical variation, was way more present. Like that's some of the things that I've written articles and lists about how a lot of the AAA industry is like very stuck in their ways, whereas like if you miss that sort of variation that you grew up with, the reason you fell in love with gaming, a lot of that is in this like mid-tier stuff or the indie stuff.
I feel it's very rare that you go to something and you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, which I love. The next thing I've got down, when I can keep this kind of quick, is Baba Is You, which I don't think either of you guys have played.
No,
I don't even know what
So Baba Is You, it's on the Switch. I think it's also on PC. It's just Baba is a little small, it looks like a bear, like a little small little mouse bear thing. It's sort of, you play it top down, it's a puzzle game, kind of like a grid-based puzzle game, and you're basically trying to create, you're trying to get to a flag. And so the basic premise is that you have the phrase, Baba Is You. So like that is the rules of the world as it is in that instance. So you go screen by screen, and it might open, for example, and at the top of the screen it'll say Baba Is You, and you're just sitting there underneath the phrase, and the flag is to the right. And so that means that you can control Baba, because the rules are always written at the top of the screen. So it'll say something like, flag is win. Baba Is You, flag is win. So you know that you need to run to the right to win. It's an easy tutorial. And then from there, it just only gets more and more ridiculous, where it'll just be like, rock is death, or Baba is death, or whatever. And you need to actively move the thing that you can control to remix the sentences, to reprogram the level so that you can get to the flag. Or make something else win. Like if you push something else in the way of the word so that it says rock is win, then all you need to do is touch the rock, even though that might be right next to you.
That sounds really cool.
It's really weird to describe, but you'll totally get it if you watch it in motion, but it's just it's that weird sort of like gamer brain where you start recoding the level, and one of the bits, I think it's in, I don't know, the fifth or sixth level, you move it so that you can move the words around, so it says, because initially it says like wall is solid or something, so you can't escape the walls, you can move it so it says wall is you, and then you start walking around as the level, because it's all like, it's like a top down dungeon, so you're just like, you're going up, down, left, right as the wall, and you walk in, you walk as a wall into a flag to win the level. It doesn't make any sense.
That kind of makes sense.
I promise I'm not on drugs, but it's really good.
Is it like the new Fez? It feels like, how you describe it, like a new sort of like Fez puzzle sort of thing. You got
it's like, it's abstract, like how Fez gets abstract with its, like with its language elements and stuff, but I can't think of much else I would liken it to. It's like, it is very, because you do start thinking, and it works if you've played a lot of games, because you understand the rules of games.
I understand that.
Like how to recode it, and you are sort of doing this sort of like surface level recoding or something, even though it is like, you know, it is a puzzle game, but yeah, I kind of just want to encourage people to try out Baba Is You. I think it's one of the most unique games this year, and I just love it. It's a very, very simplistic, like, looks like Nidhogg style art style. It's very scratchy, very sort of, you know, looks like it's been done on paint kind of thing. But it's core, like, you know, what you're doing and the way that you do it. I can't think of any other games that have done that. And when I can literally play as a dungeon, there's not enough stuff doing that.
How much is this game?
I got it, I think, for about £12.
That's pretty good.
It's not that much. As long as it's not like, I don't know what I would probably cap it at about 15-ish. I think it's definitely worth it. It's just like, it's a little sort of innovative indie thing. So that was my second one. Josh, second one was Blood and Truth.
Was it now?
Mr. VR.
Well, here we go. Please, Ben Roy's here because he's another Colin Salmon fan. The man who got me into the great actor that is Colin Salmon. Yes, this Blood and Truth game, although a lot of people had been looking forward to it since it was announced, I was always a little bit wary because London Studios, although it's not that I have anything against them, but the games that they've created in the past, this was kind of going to be a spiritual successor to The Getaway. And something, I don't know, something rubs me the wrong way
yes.
about London-based kind of crime stories. Because I always feel like they're created for an American audience and they feel a bit
Snatch.
Inauthentic. Yeah, yeah. They're always just snatched. They're always sort of, you know, blown up. They're always just dealing in stereotypes and cliches. And you've got, the Cockney rhyme. And it's like, that's not all Cockney. Right. And just like, all right, the apples and pears. What is that accent?
Pretty,
I don't even know.
Pretty offensive, that.
Sorry, Ben Roy. I realise I'm sharing a panel
London
with you.
Expert. Of all the podcasts that you could pick.
I know, I'm so sorry. But this sort of just set me up to be blown away because even though I don't like the way London Studio approaches necessarily the story or the characters because it's so just rooted in stereotypes, I feel the gameplay is just amazing and they do marvelous things with VR. They have like little touches to everything that just makes the game so immersive and so inventive. The fact that I can hold a button down and change my fingers to, you know, stick a middle finger up to someone is awesome. Right. The fact that I can hold a button down to twirl a revolver like I'm Revolver Ocelot before I pop a headshot is satisfying.
That's the thing that convinced me to buy a PSVR.
Exactly. And there's go on, Ben Roy.
Also, you're mentioning all these actions, but
yes.
the biggest one is when you're shooting people in the club as you're on the turntable.
I mean,
I saw footage of that.
That might be moment of the year.
This genuinely will be my top five moments of the year. When I realised I was not only going to face off against a bunch of goons in this DJ booth, but the fact that I had a hand free that could control every little, you know, button and knob on this DJ deck and actually influence the music and turn it up and mess with the bass while I'm essentially soundtracking my own shootout against these mafia bosses. It was incredible, Scott.
Can you spin a gun whilst you are DJing?
Yes.
Good.
You can
that
spin
awesome.
A gun.
It will remain
revolver,
as one of the games.
You can
of
flip
the
it around. No, it is. It's really good. I think it really is a. It kind of would sell you on VR if you played it. And even though I don't like the stereotypes or necessarily the presentation, it gets enough humor out of it and the characters themselves. You are invested in their plight. The fact that this blew me away, the fact that when you look at someone, when you're in VR and they look you in the eyes, you automatically empathize with them, which is a strange little twist that you don't get when you're just looking through a screen.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes.
Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Loads of like games that start in first person who try to have like intimate moments with like Far Cry villains or different things, and narratively, like, they've obviously go for that. But if it's literally in your face,
when you actually have to turn your head to look at someone in the eye, like I'm doing with you right now, it works. Yeah. And it works in the game in a way that, again, like, it just doesn't work on 2D screens.
Interesting. I mean, I'm curious about Blood and Truth, because it seems like it was the first sort of, I don't know, AAA, but it's definitely the first, like, they put a lot of money into it.
Yeah, there's a lot of money in
there. And so for someone like me that's waiting for No Man's Sky VR, then maybe I can be swayed by Blood and Truth.
PSVR, Scott.
I might, but
in this house, we respect PlayStation VR.
Maybe someday. Benroy, your next one was Void Bastards.
Yes, this is something I've actually recently discovered. Mm-hmm. I've been hearing it for ages, like, you know, on other podcasts and like just on the internet, like how this thing is like different and fun and new. You should play it. So mm-hmm. I thought, fine, I'll take the plunge. I went in last night, a few nights before as well, played it. And the first level was like, what are you doing? And then you go in there and it's like, oh, this is some sort of weird space salvage roguelite sort of thing.
I don't know if you know what it is, Josh. I have no idea.
You briefly told me about it this morning.
Okay, I know the name.
So you get set up to die straight away, and then the main robot guy is like a posh British gentleman. Oh, yeah, so you was going to die. And you go from there, like, oh, okay, they are fine, then I'm going to go to the next ship. And you start off, and each ship is, I believe, randomly generated. Mm-hmm. And you have certain sections that will always be in the ship, but mm-hmm. the layout is always different. So, like, they teach you very early on, you want to go to, like, the helm as in, like, the bridge of the mm-hmm. ship, so you can get sort of, like, a layout for where all the loot is and all the extra bits. Mm-hmm. What you're really trying to do is you're trying to go through here and you're trying to, like, grab some pens, screws, sometimes fingers, as well as, like, a specific part that will then help you make a new weapon. Okay. I mean, it's their choice.
Fingers? Cadbury's fingers?
Murder some Cockney aliens. Like, well, literally, the one guy...
Are they stereotypical Cockney aliens?
Well, one of them turns around, they called the janitor class. He goes, Gary? And then you just, like, he just starts shooting laser balls out of his mouth.
Laser balls?
Yes.
You don't see enough of them, do you?
No.
Fair.
As well as this, I cut these others are like tourists. They're basically like this big. They're like balls of goo rolling around like little things, and they explode.
Right.
And they also say some things which I can't remember.
So it's first person?
First person, yes.
And it's sort of like exploration heavy, it's very crafting heavy. Like, yeah.
You pick what you want to take. You can have like one weapon and like some other sub sort of weapons. Mm-hmm. But you go through, and it's like, what's really interesting as well is you can like section off parts of the ship. Like, mm-hmm. I play it very much like, well, I've even got a lot of ammo, so I'm going to run in there. All these dudes turn around and go, Gary, I run back out and I lock the door, and then they just can't get to me.
This sounds crazy.
And then when you can go to the ship, you can pay like an extra 10, like, I think it's called merits, their currency, where you can sort of like, you'll get attracted to see all the enemies on there. And there are certain points where they respawn forever.
Okay. Mm.
So it's like, do I lock this part of the ship off, run around, take the long way, go past the big slow man that's got potentially going to beat me up and sort of thing?
Listen, not to bring everything back to the PlayStation VR, but there is a very similar game called The Persistence on PSVR.
Yeah, but where you've played that.
it's kind of like, I don't know if it's the same setup anyway, but essentially you start off on the ship, and every single dark, you have to get to the fifth floor, I think, and every floor is procedurally generated and changes every time you die, but you retain knowledge of, oh, I know you need X amount of crafting points to get this weapon, or this weapon could be located over here. And I love that. I'm not a huge fan of roguelikes, but I like it when it's in first person, I think. that's all I
and
can...
The art style of this is like really bright colours, like sort of like comic booky sort of thing. So you just like, it's fun to look at. And so far the loop's been enough where it's like, and it's one of those games that's really perfect. Like, you can have your full attention, or it's also a pretty good podcast game.
Mm.
So you could be
I really want to do a good podcast game. Like, I want to do a whole list on the best podcast games, even though I don't think the terminology is out there enough for people to know what it is. If you do know what a podcast game is, or you would recognize that term, shout it out down in the comments below, or come find us on social media and just champion the fact that podcast games are some of the best things to play.
Discord?
Yeah.
Discord is a very good example for the wrong reasons, because you just ignore the whole
Deacon
story.
Deacon St. John. But
Big old Dickie.
On Game Pass, if you've got an Xbox One, mm-hmm. through a Game Pass, just get it. It's like,
give it a shot.
Give it an hour and you'll be like, oh, this is either for me or it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, that's all I've got to say.
Sounds good. And the next thing I've got down on my last one is Fire Emblem Three Houses. Now, obviously, Fire Emblem was being anticipated a hell of a lot. It's obviously like a story franchise and everything. But the thing that I didn't realize or didn't expect at all is that Fire Emblem Three Houses is pretty much a Persona game, where like the way that the story's set up is it's thousands of years after all the other the majority of all the other games, and basically the three houses are these three different sort of continents that are in, or these three different houses that are on this big sort of country with one academy in the middle, this sort of religious academy in the middle, and you go to this academy to learn how to fight, to maintain the peace kind of thing, that's when it turns into a Persona game. You get hired as a professor and you have different classes to take care of and different students that you want to look after, different skills you want to teach them, and they'll ask you questions about their life and relationships and philosophy, and you get to be the really cool the hip-hop professor that everyone had one of in school, but it's just that you have this sort of calendar system that is telling you like when battles are going to be coming up, when different tournaments are happening in the academy, when different maybe a village is under attack because some ruffians are trying to restore wartime, and you've got to like deploy your squad, paired with all the standard Fire Emblem stuff of permadeath and characters, if you lose your best archer then you're never going to get them back again, but that might be your star pupil that you've raised for months of in-game time that you're really proud of.
I like that a lot. So there's not only a mechanical sort of downside to losing it, but there's an actual,
you're really emotively invested,
yeah.
Which Fire Emblem's always had that emotive side to it as well, but it was nearly always because you were a platoon of soldiers or knights or mages or whatever, and you were going out to try and do the right thing. But by tying it with this Persona element where you have like day-to-day living in the academy, you can freely explore the academy, you can go fishing, you can invite people to dinner, you can go like plant some crops and whatever, and like there's all these weird little sort of university academy style underpinnings to it that bring it all together in like a really weird, in a really really perfect way, but in a way that I didn't see coming at all. I stayed away from a lot of the previews, maybe that stuff is just out there, but there was a bunch of times when I was like, this is literally Persona with Fire Emblem's combat, and it's like incredible.
That's good.
I would encourage you guys to try it.
Would you say, because obviously Catherine's full-body edition is going to come out, would you say Catherine is a good way to start to get into that sort of genre? Because isn't that similar to Persona in a way?
I'm making the Persona comparison in terms of like the scheduling and the school stuff and the academies and everything. Catherine is good in terms of like Eastern quirk, but I wouldn't say it's like gameplay wise it's way more arcadey. Like Catherine is like a mini game kind of thing. But if you want to get into interpersonal relationship stuff, there's some things in Catherine. What was the thing you were going
to
say, John?
Did we talk on a podcast last week about how good it is to have that kind of structure in games?
That was when I was very first starting to play it, and it was in the news for something, and it like made me realize that I love not necessarily like daily and monthlies in terms of goals and crap, but I like when there's a narrative reason for you to get invested, or to keep coming back and like maintain your students and teach them something, and go out in the field together and don't die.
I'm really interested in
it's
game.
Really good. If you're on Switch, and this is maybe, this would potentially be your first Fire Emblem, I think this is a really good place to start. It would either be this or Awakening on the 3DS, but like obviously through accessibility more people probably have Switches, I think. That would be my third one. Josh, your third one was Ultimate Alliance 3.
Yes, a game that I keep going backwards and forwards.
You last told me you hated it, sir.
Oh, I did not use the words hate.
No, you said that you loved it, but I think you were like, oh, but also
part
sometimes.
Of me hates it. It's kind of, again, the Days Gone situation, which I ramble on about on every single podcast. It's that there are elements in Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 that I deeply love, and that every single time I boot it up, I am engaged with, and that I find compelling, and I have a really good time with. It's just that there's a lot of downsides as well, There's a lot of things that are kind of frustrating, and it surprised me because, for me, even though I love Marvel Ultimate Alliance 1 and 2, I went into the third game looking at the previews and just sort of making the cynical assumption that it's going to be, it just looks like a downgraded mobile game. It's not going to be a proper sequel. There's a reason why it's not in the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One.
True.
Which, you can kind of see that in the final product. But at the same time, it is fun and there's way more depth to it than I might have initially give it credit for.
It's weird because all the ISO 8 stuff, all the like incremental percentage based stuff, I initially was like, oh god, it's one of those progression systems, and I kind of bounced off it. But weirdly, it does completely tie into all the separate missions, the Infinity stuff. Like you do need to specialize in strength and vitality and whatever to get through those things.
That's what's kind of pulled me back around. The Infinity challenges are a real test of skill and might, and I love putting time into these characters and learning their intricacies and trying not to get absolutely butchered with them and then combining special to take on major bosses. It is just a thrill, I think, that the game nails when you are engaging in the combat and you see all the colours and the numbers popping off. And if you're a Marvel fan, that's sort of a dream come true.
I was going to say, Benway, you're a big MCU Marvel fan.
Yeah.
Is this bringing you in?
I'm more the X-Men guy. So the fact that
there's
a big X-Men thing in here, and I love the X-Men Legend games. Like, they were the ones. But for me, I've heard it's a bit repetitive, and although I did see that watching some footage, like, they don't, it's not just straight up like going around beating people up. Like, there's a part where you run away from the Juggernaut.
Yes.
And you have to lose to like Magneto and stuff.
Those set pieces, I'm doing weird hand motions because yes. I'm invested in it. Those set pieces when you're running away from the Juggernaut are one of my favorites, when you're going up Avengers Tower and Giant Man is fighting someone, Ultron.
Yeah.
On they're just huge, they're towering over the city and they're hitting each other in the backdrop and you're having your own skirmishes. Those big set pieces and the scale of those set pieces is just, if you're a comic book fan, hard to argue with.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, the only reason I've not got this yet is because, one, it's on Switch. I have a Switch, but it feels like saying I want to play more on like a PlayStation 4 or something like that.
Now, interesting you should say this, because yes. I disagree. If this came out on the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox One, I think some of those earlier assumptions would have stuck. I think if you bought this full price on a PlayStation 4, you would feel a bit short.
Yeah, I think it fits on the Switch.
Switch. I mostly played it when, it's kind of like a podcast game. I played it when something else was on the TV in the background and I sort of undocked my Switch, set it up on the table in front of it and was just sort of playing it from a distance.
I also play on the train like pretty much every day. Like, yeah, I think it is weird because it is one big kind of, it feels like a mobile game. Like, it feels like you're playing it in a way that you would play like just a really tap heavy, you know, just tap this to get the meters up kind of game. But I also think that it does click, and it's weird. Like, it is weird how much it does work, even though on the surface of it, it's like, oh God, it's like a glorified version of Marvel Heroes.
Yeah, it's one of those things that if you take a step back, you can pick it apart. You can compare it to the other Marvel Ultimate Alliance games and easily see where it falls short. Mm-hmm. But man, in the moments where it does click, is all is forgiven.
Beautiful.
For those brief moments.
Good. So Ben Roy, your last one is Ape Out, which is a hell of a pick.
Yes, so another Switch game, like, just only came to Switch, I think PC, I think it came to as
well. I think
so,
yeah.
But this is just something really different to what I've played. Again, I've said this with Plague Tale, but like a rhythm music-based sort of top-down.
It reminded me of Hotline Miami. Like, it's a top-down thing, but you're playing as an ape. It's very, like, pop-coloured, and you're playing as, like, the colour palette sort of changes a lot, but you're running around as this ape just wrecking everything.
With smooth jazz playing until you start beating people up or grabbing them and throwing them at their friends, and then you get the... Everyone starts playing the drums and you really get into it, and the music sort of, like, ramps up with you. And it's really interesting how, like... Because each level is randomised, and even if you die, they'll just re-randomise it over and over again. And it's just, it looks so simple, but it's basically you're a gorilla and you need to get out.
You're an ape, you might say.
You're an ape.
But it is that thing where, like, you're kind of composing it as you go. Like, I should have mentioned it in the music pod yesterday, or the other day or whatever. But yeah, like, when your ape moves, it does like the dung, da dung, da dung. Like, you've got like underneath, like, the sort of driving rhythm of it. And then, like, you know, you smash them off a wall and you get a cymbal crash, or like you pick someone up, and it's like you're kind of composing this like makeshift jazz, like, sort of composition as you go. And it's just like, it is incredibly violent in terms of people just explode against the walls, but it's all kind of really lovely and joyous as well.
Lovely, joyous, but then also really unforgiving.
Yes.
And also there's like no health meter either, so you can only tell like how much health you have, like, by how much you're bleeding. So this is another one. It's like, and certain levels get dark, so you can't see that, and it's
the way they do like the flashlights, like, cutting through the level is really cool though. And you can pick off, you can use like a door as a shield, then you might want to throw the door at like four remaining people or whatever.
Grab the really guys good. And when you grab a guy, you get one of his shots to shoot at someone else, so you can sort of start chaining their attacks through as it goes through. Towards the end, I will say, it gets really hard. Like, that was my playing game as we went to New York this year, just trying to like get through this game. I couldn't do it. I handed it over to Adam Nicholas, and he couldn't do it either, and we're just racking our heads like, how can we get through this last level? Hours later, having a ton of fun, just couldn't do it though.
That's so cool.
I would totally recommend it though.
I am really, really interested in this. To be honest, every single game you mentioned on the podcast, both of you, and I'm not just saying that because I'm here on the podcast with you, sounds really good. And the fact that almost all of them are for Switch, I mean, it finally gives me a reason to pick that bad boy back up. And
wouldn't you know it, you've said such a lovely final sentiment, and we've hit time as well.
Wow,
so what a beautiful way to end. Yes, we recommend all these following games. You can all come and find us on social media as well if you're listening on audio stuff, or leave your own suggestions down in the comments below. For now though, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylorford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, goodbye.
And Ben Roy Trainer.
Goodbye there.
We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter.
Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.